morning, everybody. This is Frank Riccio, and this is Talking About the Law. With me is my guest, Dominic Paolini, who is an accomplished trial attorney as well as a physician. Dominic, welcome back. One of the other areas that we deal with in terms of medical malpractice is a failure to diagnose and treat a stroke. Could you tell us a little bit about what's involved with that?
Okay. Basically, strokes are very similar to heart attacks, where a stroke is a heart attack of the brain. And let's just recap a little. The heart muscle itself needs to have blood delivered to it in order for it to do its work. The brain also needs to have blood delivered to it to do its thinking and its work. The arteries are what carry the blood to the heart and to the brain. The heart has three major arteries that carry blood to it. The brain has more than three, but fewer than 10. Whenever the blood flow is obstructed to the heart or to the brain, trouble will occur. When blood flow to the brain doesn't happen, you have what's called a stroke. Now, just like the heart has something called a pre-infarction or angina, the brain also has a similar pathophysiology. That is that it's possible for the brain to receive just enough blood to keep itself alive, but not enough blood to do its thinking and its work. When the blood flow to the brain is completely cut off, you have damage to the brain cells and you have a stroke. Just like when you want to restore blood flow to the heart muscle as quickly as possible, when you have a stroke, you want to restore blood flow to the brain as quickly as possible. In the setting of a stroke, the restoration of blood flow is usually done with something called clot busters. These are drugs that actually digest away clots and blockages so that blood flow can be restored to the brain.
Now, we've been talking mainly about failure to diagnose different types of cardiovascular conditions. And as lawyers, what we have to do is we have to show, first of all, that the doctor was negligent or the nurse was negligent. And so in doing that, what we have to do is show that what they did was below the standard of care. And Dominic, you've been essentially telling us various scenarios as they relate to negligence, correct?
Yes.
Now, in taking on a medical malpractice case, proving negligence is just not enough. You can show that a doctor is negligent, but you have to establish what is known as legal causation. And Dominic, I'm just going to have you kind of explain that to the audience.
Okay. The legal causation is the burden that the plaintiff or the patient has to show that what the doctor did do or didn't do, that is the negligence, actually caused the damages. For example, if a patient comes in with symptoms or findings that are consistent, say, with cancer, and the doctor doesn't pick up that cancer, and the patient then undergoes more tests a few months later where the cancer is picked up, the doctor who missed the cancer can't be blamed for missing the diagnosis because the diagnosis was eventually made. If the patient then dies of the cancer, the plaintiff can't argue to a jury that because the cancer was missed a couple of months before it was actually diagnosed, that this actually caused the patient's death. In that case that we're talking about, the cancer caused the patient's death, not the failure to diagnose it. However, if a patient goes into a doctor with symptoms of cancer, the doctor fails to diagnose the cancer, and then 5 or 6 years later, the patient dies of the cancer, then you can say that the failure to diagnose that cancer actually caused the patient's death.
Now, in the setting of cardiovascular disease, is it a general? Does the plaintiff have to prove that the outcome would have been better had there been a diagnosis and an earlier intervention?
Yes, that's the plaintiff's burden. And usually what the defense is that when a patient goes into an emergency room or to their primary care, is having an acute coronary syndrome that leads to a heart attack or involves a heart attack, and the patient suffers severe muscle damage or death, the defense is, the argument is that the damage would have happened anyways, that the death would have happened anyways, that this was such a big heart attack that no doctor could have done anything, even if the condition had been diagnosed.
And how do you prove that fallacy? Because with cardiovascular cases, we're not talking months. We're really talking minutes.
Yes.
And how do you counter that defense?
The usual way to counter that defense is, again, using experts who then rely on the algorithms. For example, if a patient goes into an emergency room and has a good blood pressure, is not dizzy, you can assume that that patient basically had a good heart when they arrived in the emergency room. If the patient hours later is sent home and then hours after that has a heart attack where suddenly the heart function is severely diminished, it's easy to prove that the patient went into the emergency room with basically a good heart, but a heart that was in impending danger, and hours later suffered severe myocardial heart damage or death, that the failure to diagnose actually caused the damages.
Now, there's a saying, heart, time is muscle, or relating to heart. How does that work?
Yep. When a patient has an acute coronary syndrome, that is an impending heart attack or an ongoing heart attack, the longer the condition is undiagnosed and untreated, the more heart muscle is going to be irreversibly damaged. When enough heart muscle is irreversibly damaged, that usually leads to the patient's death. So the diagnosis needs to be made quickly. One of the most common scenarios is a patient goes to an emergency room and says, I have chest pain. The doctor asks about, have you ever had this chest pain before? Like if the patient says, no, this is really crushing chest pain, it's new. And the doctor assumes that it's something simple like indigestion, because there may be a history that the patient ate a pepperoni pizza that night. And the doctor just assumes that this new chest pain is just indigestion or gastric reflux or something like that. In fact, most of the cases that I have in my office that deal with undiagnosed heart attacks, the patient actually went into the emergency room and told the doctor about the chest pain, and the doctor just assumed that it was some kind of indigestion that could be treated with Maalox.
And that could have a deadly outcome for a patient.
Yes. You know, especially in a patient with chest pain, again, listen to the history, the risk factors. Is there a family history of heart disease? And also, a doctor needs what's called a high index of suspicion. And let's face it, if a patient has never had indigestion or chest pain strong enough to bring them to the emergency room, it is truly below the standard of care or malpractice for a doctor to send a patient home and say, you know, you just have plain old indigestion. Because a doctor should be thinking, well, this is the why is it the patient having their first incidence of indigestion when they're 60 or 70? And why is this indigestion so bad that they actually came into the emergency room? And oftentimes our cases are based on the failure for the doctor to have this high index of suspicion.
Now, your firm does medical malpractice cases, and what is the screening process that you use to actually take a case?
Okay. Our screening process is to review the medical records, then talk to the client to find out if what the client remembers is different than in the medical records. And we're seeing this more and more in that the doctors, mostly because they're pressed for time, the medical record keeping is not very complete. Or sometimes the medical record is a computer-generated medical record that doesn't really have all the information. So what we need to do with the client is we need to go through the history taking, the tests that were done, whether the patient had a family history, what the previous lab test showed, and then determine whether the failure to diagnose an impending or an ongoing heart attack was below the standard of care. And oftentimes, we find that it was below the standard of care not to diagnose the heart attack.
Now, obviously, being a physician and being a cardiovascular surgeon, you're kind of a ready-made expert. But in terms of actually deciding to take a case, the case still has to be reviewed by an independent expert, correct?
Yes, and we in the office do the initial screening, but we really always go to an independent expert, an expert in cardiology or an expert in emergency medicine or both, to determine whether or not this is truly a malpractice case. And with this type of screening where we do in-house screening followed by screening by one or more experts really ensures that the case is not what's known to the public as a frivolous case or a frivolous lawsuit.
And how are the fees on these cases typically handled?
The fees on medical malpractice cases in Massachusetts are governed by a statute. The statute tells the attorney and the client exactly how much fees the lawyer is entitled to or the law firm is entitled to. It generally averages out to be about a third.
Now, in terms of your decision to take a case, once you've decided to take a case, what is the next step?
The next step is, up until recently, was to file a lawsuit. However, the medical malpractice laws have changed about a year ago. And what is required now is that a detailed letter be sent to the doctor describing exactly what the patient and the lawyer feel was the negligence. Once the letter is sent to the physician has a number of months, usually about 6 months, in order to respond to the letter or to try and settle the case. The idea of this new law was to make settlement of cases quicker and therefore better for the patient, but it has a dark side too. What it does is it lays out your entire case for the physician defendant. And oftentimes what we're finding is that the physician defendant takes your detailed letter describing every little thing that you think that went wrong or the doctor did wrong, and they find their own expert who then counters with that, well, every little thing that the patient says was wrong really wasn't wrong, and you end up litigating or filing a lawsuit anyways.
And the intent, as I understand it, with 60L, which is the required letter that we have to file, is to actually encourage settlement and actually to afford an apology to the patient as well. My experience at this point has been very mixed, but I've never seen an apology.
I've never seen an apology either. And, you know, and an apology doesn't really... in my opinion, doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter to the clients. They basically need the compensation. These are people, for example, in the eye of an undiagnosed heart attack, they may be unable to work. They may be able to go on disability, but they'll never be as receive the same compensation that they would at work. These are people that usually want to work. They have a long history of working. Life changes for their family as well. All of a sudden, a family member, a father or a mother, is incapacitated. They can't play basketball with their children. They don't have the energy to do things that they have had done in the past. So the apology is not really what's important.
Dominic, we have to take a sorry to interrupt you. We have to take a break. This is talking about the law. When we return, we'll wrap up and talk again about bringing the lawsuit, but also what are some of the public policy reasons behind bringing these lawsuits. I thank you so much.